Good morning and welcome to Sunday Take for February 22nd, 2026. I'm your host, Blois Olson. It has been a week of the kickoff of the legislative session, and they started fast and furious on the Inspector General bill on fraud, and the partisanship kicked in after a somber but significant opening day in remembering Melissa and Mark Hortman, as well as Senator John Hoffman returning to the Senate session priorities dinner from the Minnesota chamber. As I've been doing the last few weeks, I want to pull out on a big picture issue. And this week we're going to talk about housing. But if you're listening to this in real time on the radio, I got to tell you, you should probably be watching the USA Canada gold medal game, because that's what I'm doing and trying to watch that. You can always podcast this. Subscribe at your best podcast channel, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of the other podcast channels, including the Odyssey app on your phone. Housing is personal. I've worked in it with clients in it for a long time. And there continues to be this very interesting tug of war about housing. And as I've tried to get into it, I'm struck by how the regulatory environment in Minnesota can get called out for costing housing more, but we don't do anything about it, and we haven't for years. In the take, I'm going to talk about kind of the various views on housing and how it's part of our economy and something that when you mess with it, the domino effect is as harsh as anything in our economy. So enjoy the show, Housing First. President and CEO James Bogley is going to be with me in the first segment. And then we'll have State Representative Esther Agbaje with me in the final segment. I'm Blois Olson. This is Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. My guest is James Bogley. He is CEO of Housing First Minnesota. They represent the large sector of builders, home builders, I'll call them housing providers. Is we talk about housing, as I mentioned in the open, housing has emerged. It's been a topic. Cost of housing, rents, which we'll address later, have been this kind of ongoing piece. But in the last, I don't know, year and a half, I've just begun to hear more and more about the cost of housing, especially for Gen Z and millennials, and how we get there. And then, as the legislature opened this week, housing has been on the lips of both Democrats and Republicans as something that Minnesota has to address. And Housing First leads the way on many of these issues at the Capitol. James, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Let's just start, Housing First, that's your trade association, but tell me who you represent and what the mission of your organization is.
Yeah, our mission is home ownership opportunities for all Minnesotans. It's a unifying mission, and you got it right in the intro. We are housing providers, home builders, land developers, suppliers of goods and services, all with the mission to expand home ownership opportunity.
This week, between session priorities and some early interviews with legislative leaders, housing has been called out, I think, more loudly than in the last few years. Is that part kind of slow to respond to the market, slow to respond to builders saying we need to change some things, or is it timely? And where are we at? Are we behind? Are we ahead? Where do we need to go?
I think it's both timely and we are a bit behind. I would say nationally, there's probably been more momentum over the past decade. But we go back to 2018. Governor Dayton, in his final year in office, had his housing task force, and it identified housing supply, undersupply, as one of the major issues. So we have been in varying phases, quiet phase, policy phase, persuasion, and I think we're at a point now, Blois, what you're hearing is there is a deeper understanding of the policy challenges, and you're hearing it from your friends and neighbors. Certainly, that's what legislators are reflecting, is that the lack of housing options is driving up housing costs, and it impacts everything from first-time home buyer opportunity, competitiveness from a business standpoint. It's, I think, reached that critical point. So in that regard, it's timely. We're encouraged by what we're hearing as well, just a much broader awareness and willingness to dig into this issue.
I'm going to pull out because many of our listeners, and I live in the Twin Cities, many of us think about the Twin Cities, but housing has been a challenge across the state, especially workforce housing.
Yes.
Large employers are saying, you can't get somebody to move to your community for a job if they don't have a place to live, or people have long commute times. Has this been an issue in greater Minnesota that now is intensifying and closer you get to the Twin Cities?
Yes, no question about it. So those submarkets, Rochester is one of the strongest examples. Rochester is one of the most undersupplied submarkets in the state. The Twin Cities, we build about 70% of housing here, so it gets its fair share of attention and policy scrutiny. But there's Thief River Falls and War Road and other issues around the state, Perham. All those communities are grappling with trying to grow their local economies and the inability to produce housing at scale. So it's a statewide issue, no question.
I guess this is James Vogley. He's the head of Housing First Minnesota. We're talking about housing as a legislative issue. So lay it out. What are the things the legislature could do this year that would, spark growth in housing, more construction, things like that? Is it about cost? Is it about land use? What is the recipe to maybe create some sort of catalyst here?
It's a great question. Zoning modernization is atop the list from Housing First Minnesota's perspective, and we're part of a really interesting, diverse coalition of interest from AFP to Habitat for Humanity to community organizations to a trade group like Housing First. So, zoning modernization is part of a suite of policy proposals that are standing before us. We have not, in a substantive way, updated zoning since the early 90s, since I was in high school. So, it's been over 3 decades since we've had a deep policy discussion on zoning authority that the state grants to local governments. And I think that really gets poised to where this lands. The state establishes the broad authority that our 800 plus cities implement on the ground. And that's really where this discussion has landed, is that we believe a lot has changed since the early 90s when you think just about the competitive landscape, demographics, consumer appetites and interests have changed substantially. So that really is where the policy debate has landed. And we think that's a great place to start. Housing is complex, so there are a lot of different approaches that need to happen. But I think job one is to bring starter homes back. We really need to have starter homes on the menu of available housing options, and we think that would be the biggest first step the legislature could help us with.
What do you feel like the momentum looks like this year? Obviously, we have a tie in the House, so one seat in the Senate. You do have bipartisan support. Then it's just about the willingness and the inertia in the legislative session. But this is one of the reasons I wanted to talk about housing this week, is because bipartisan legislators have brought it up and continue to say it. Do you feel like this is a sleeper issue that you feel optimistic about this year?
We're optimistic, and I think it is a sleeper issue. And it's interesting, in such a closely divided legislature, in an intense stretch of partisanship, housing is different. Housing is incredibly popular with Minnesotans. Homeownership as an institution is a 90 plus percent issue. People want to own homes. And I think the legislature reflects that. So we do see it as a sleeper issue in part because it's got a rare bipartisan mix. And we're seeing that in all four caucuses. We've got support that's pretty rare in modern legislative times.
Is there a number of units we're behind on, and is there a percentage of cost that you think can be reduced by some reform or some modernization in Minnesota?
Absolutely. So we're just under 100,000 units
Oh.
behind. And the downstream impacts of that are substantial. We are the most expensive market to build new housing in Middle America. So zoning modernization would allow us to introduce housing products that aren't in our market today. And yes, so those would be substantially more affordable. And would invite more Minnesotans into the housing market. So it's, from a median, when we're approaching north of 550,000, we're somewhere between, 550 and 570 for a median new home. That isn't going to work from a housing supply, affordability, and access standpoint. It's already not working. So introducing a whole new product line is really what we're trying to accomplish.
One of the things I have to ask, though, is we've dealt with a higher cost for everything, it seems lately, food, fuel, all the things, right? How skeptics might say, how are you going to drive down costs? Is cost really going to go down, or is this as simple as supply and demand? And I'm thinking you mentioned being in high school in the 90s, not to date myself a little, but mid 90s is when I moved back to Minnesota and bought my first house. And I bought in the city, but the starter home, the town home, the twin home product in the Woodbury or the Eden Prairie was just on fire, right? Like the newspaper back then, every Saturday was just the real estate section was huge. Is that what we're kind of aspiring for? Is that there's that many products available, that there's that much supply available that as I travel the country, I see things like that in other parts of the country, but I chalk that more up to migration. Kind of paint the picture of what people will see once these new products come out.
A incremental densification of single family, so smaller lot, smaller structure, smaller garage, single family homes, which are in enormous demand across Minnesota. And then, as you mentioned, townhomes, twin homes, reintroducing single car garage products. We're at, demographically, the household formation and the size of households has never been smaller. So the housing market should reflect that. And that's, I think it's important that mid-90s comparison, if we want to look at that, I think at the time you were buying your first home, it's likely that existing homes were the starter home. And it was a different supply and demographic balance. Well, now at a severe undersupply of just under 100,000 homes that were short, the existing homes are not able to fill that void. And so we need to build our way out of this. And it's something we're seeing around the country, Montana, Texas, but then just this week, Governor Shapiro in Pennsylvania, Governor Pritzker in Illinois. This is a true bipartisan issue where states are looking at, the undersupply, which is a national issue. It's more
Yeah.
intense here in Minnesota, but it's a national issue since the Great Recession. We just have not built at scale. And that's got all of the cascading impacts to being able to supply the market.
I'm sure you guys, Housing First is pretty good at data. So in a perfect world, how quickly could we catch up? Is it 5 years? Is it 10 years? Because I remember a moment when we thought we were going to get 1 million new people in the Twin Cities. And I remember working with developers and builders during that time
Yes.
that were panicked because we didn't have the supply. We never got those 1 million people, but I can feel the bottleneck in housing, having worked obviously with the multifamily folks for a long time, to understand that. Is there a point in the future where you say if we could build, I don't know, 30,000 a year, we start to pull this out of an issue?
Yeah, I mean, at that pace, we would begin in about a decade to get closer to parity. And that's what we would want is a balanced housing market. And it would take that level of production. It's actually one of the key features of the legislation that is soon to be introduced is a streamlining of the process. That really, from your experience and certainly from ours on the ownership side, both, multifamily and single family, the process delays are substantial. And the planned unit development process and the development by variance, which Minnesota leads the country on, which is not something we want to lead the country on. We only want to use variances for truly unique and challenging development processes. So having a streamlined approach would get us to that 10-year plan faster.
When as this legislation goes forward, we'll keep our listeners informed, but what are the things that you think will be the first signs that you have momentum in this session?
You know, I think in there's a collection of proposals, you know, include senior living, development near transit and job centers, and then a Starter Home Act, which the Starter Home Act it does appear to have the most momentum. I think seeing that in committee and moving to the floor will be a very positive sign. You know, you've mentioned you're hearing more about it. We've made tremendous progress, especially over the last 3 years in a bipartisan way, and certainly Representative Howard, Representative Igoe, Senators Port and Rasmussen. So a true bipartisan mix have been leading on this. And last year was, you know, from a process standpoint, you know, really deep into the committee process. I think, you know, we need to see these bills emerge from that onto the floor where we can have a broader debate. And I think this is the year to do that.
James Vogley, thanks for joining me on Sunday Today.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, more on the process. Is it bipartisan? Can they get this over the finish line? I'm Blaise Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. My guest next is State Representative Esther Agbaje. And she works a lot on housing issues. And she joins me to talk about kind of this suite of housing proposals that are out there, where she thinks things need to focus, and what can be done this session and what can be done as we go forward. Representative Agbaje, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So just why don't you set the scene? Where do you see housing as an issue right now? I feel like it has been more discussed or more highlighted as a potential legislative issue this session by leaders as in previous sessions. What's the discussion in your caucus?
The discussion really around housing is ensuring that more people can stay in their homes. One of the things, especially after the ICE incursions we've seen, is people haven't been able to go to work or their hours have been cut. And so that means oftentimes, you know, whoever would be a breadwinner isn't available anymore, whether they've been detained or they're just too scared to go into the office or the restaurant or the shop. And so we want to make sure that we have that type of assistance available for people so that way they can pay the rent and they can be at home.
Some groups have called for a rent strike. Other people have asked for an eviction moratorium. Are those solutions that are short term, or do they create more problems going in the future?
I see those as very short-term solutions. We're looking at a couple of months max, 3 months max, maybe, at least in my opinion. But really, it's to give people that time to find the rental assistance resources. So then that way they can pay that money directly back to the landlord. It's a win-win situation for both renters and landlords.
Housing providers for years have been talking about supply, and we've had quite a bit of supply built in the last few years in the rental market, including some more affordable. But the, you know, home ownership has remained distant for a lot of people, and the Builders Association wants more production. They want to make sure that the ecosystem has people allows people to move up, so we don't have these kind of bottlenecks in the system. Where do you see either density or more supply coming into the discussion?
I think we've had a lot of legislators talk about reforming some of our zoning laws to make it easier to build more density and, you know, have more people closer to transit, have them closer to jobs. And so I think, you know, I want us to continue in that vein. I'm glad it's a bipartisan measure. I'm glad more people are understanding the need for housing and the need for those original starter homes that aren't $500,000, right? So that's what we're trying to do. We know cities want their flexibility, and some of the new language and some of these laws allow for that. So I'm hoping that this will be another session where more people can work together to really get to the root of the problem, which is we need more housing supply in our state in order to make sure more people can live in the type of home that they want.
Where do you see, I know you're, you have your district's in Minneapolis. Minneapolis has had a lot of building over the last few years. Where do you see housing in the urban core? Because Minneapolis has continued to have development, where St. Paul obviously had, a freeze after they passed rent control. Where do you see kind of the need in the cities for density or for more production?
I think you definitely see that in our downtown corridor. Minneapolis is one of these cities that I feel like has a vibrant residential downtown, which is amazing. You don't see that in many parts of the country. So I think that's something to upkeep. I think St. Paul had a similar thing as well. I know people have been trying to come back into St. Paul, which is great. I think also in our suburban areas, there's a need for density there as well. People especially want to be connected to transit, and people want to be able to use public transit to move between the city corridor, the center core, as well as out into the suburbs. So I think there's a lot we can do about finding ways to build either multi-housing units, multi-family housing units, or even in some cases, single-family housing units to provide for those, new families just starting out.
What are the other bills that are out there that people are talking about with housing? There's obviously the short-term assistance that you mentioned. There's some of the zoning pieces. Are there other parts of the state where you've either talked to a legislator from a different part of the state where they need housing? Where do you see greater Minnesota, their needs? Because that's been one of the employer complaints and stress points for a while, is that, in Rochester, Mankato, those kind of places, employers can't find housing for their workers.
That's exactly right. We hear that up and down the state, particularly in rural areas. Developers want to go there, businesses want to go there, but there's no place for people to live once they hire them. So that's a huge problem. One of the things I think that can try to help with that is, of course, putting funds into workforce development housing, but also start to think about who is buying up our housing across the state of Minnesota. And we are starting to see some increases in corporate investors owning housing, which I think is a big deal, and also prevents regular people from being able to buy oftentimes their first home. So I have a bill for that to limit corporate investor ownership in single family homes. And so we're hoping that that can be a way to try to continue to incentivize housing directly for people.
How much would you limit that? How would you go about it? How would it work for the investors?
So we've done a couple of different versions. One was a straight cap. We've continued to have conversations with stakeholders. We're looking more at like a fee or tax structure. And interestingly enough, this is also something that Congress wants to look at. And they've also looked at a fee or tax structure. And surprisingly, President Trump says that he agrees with this policy and would like to see it move forward.
It is interesting that it has emerged at that level. When you see those actors, and having worked in and around housing for a long time, one of the dynamics here is sometimes legislation is targeted at bad actors when the good actors get kind of folded up into it. How do we make sure, because Minnesota does have a tradition of having mostly good actors in housing, unlike some of the coastal cities, where do you incentivize good owners or good property managers to make sure they don't get caught up in some of these issues?
I think what I like to say, especially in the landlord-tenant space, which is where I've done a lot of my work, if you're a good landlord, none of these rules are going to apply to you, because most of the time you're probably following them anyway, or you're even offering something better to your tenants. We put these rules in place for the people who do something wrong or are trying to take advantage or exploit people. So that's when they come into play. Other than that, I think that, especially on the corporate investor owner side, what we're really trying to do this time around is target these really large hedge funds who have the capacity to buy up 25, 50, 100 homes all at one time. No individual person can compete with that. And so we just want to make sure we have a level playing field before Minnesota becomes like one of the southwestern states that has completely really been behind the ball on this issue.
My guest is Representative Esther Agabaje. She is a state rep. She focuses on housing issues. She's co-chair or co-vice chair of Ways and Means in the Minnesota House. She represents the district in Minneapolis. Pull out, it's an election year, and education, taxes, the economy, all of these other issues usually get the headlines. How do you try to bring housing into the forefront as a discussion item during an election year, especially when, there's so much other news out in the cycle?
Yeah, that's a really great question. What I always tell people is if you don't have housing, everything else falls apart. So if you don't have housing, it's going to be really hard for you to keep and maintain your job, really hard for you to keep and maintain going to school, really hard for you to keep and maintain your physical health and your mental health. So if people are housed in safe, dignified places, I think some of those issues actually start to resolve themselves, particularly on an individual level. And you may even start to see some greater returns on investment that we have put in spaces like healthcare, education, all of those types of things. So I say housing is core and foundational to everything else we're trying to do. And so without having that housing, it makes all the other issues a lot harder.
When you look at housing and you bring up, if you don't have housing, it makes those other issues harder. But homelessness is obviously another topic that gets, a lot of attention, from encampments to just the idea of making sure that our veterans have homes, et cetera. There's these partial places. How do you think we're doing on homelessness? It feels as though it has gotten worse and we've had more housing. So can you explain how, like in the core city, we have more units, but we still have more unhoused people. Is that the economy? Is it mental health? Is it addiction? Or is it that complex and it's not really a housing issue?
I think it's a mix kind of the economy and also the prices of housing, right? So like we have a lot of these units that are coming on board, but they're priced at a really high point in the market. And if you're someone who's struggling to get back on your feet, it's almost impossible to be able to A, afford it, and then B, maintain it. And so we do need to continue to put investments and supports not only in preventing homelessness from the beginning, so making sure you don't get evicted. But also, if you are homeless, how can we make sure that we're walking with you to get a place to live, help you pay that rent, help you get on your feet so that way you can continue paying that rent? I think it's a lot of intersecting issues coming together, but I think we can do it when we focus on the individuals, the people, and what are the exact resources that they need to get back on track.
Pull out, look down the road 10 years. How do you see policy changing? Are we leading? Are we lagging? And what would it take for Minnesota to make great strides in its housing issue over the next 10 years?
I hope Minnesota is a leader. We've continued to be a leader in a variety of areas, and I think we can continue to be so in housing. One of the really interesting things that we were able to do last year is we were able to put some seed funding into what's known as local housing, which is essentially where the government starts to get back into the housing game, where they start to be the builders, they start to be the managers. It's kind of like, they call it like it's like public housing 2.0, but rather than all the stigma of public housing, it's really like, how do you make mixed income housing that's well maintained, that has the support and the investment from the government to be able to ensure that people are paying an affordable rate? And so that's something that we put some seed funding into last year. And I'm hoping 10 years down the line, it flourishes and we have a number of units that are well maintained and people can afford them and they're really building strong communities.
As we close here, are there things that you want listeners to know about work and housing? Because again, it doesn't get the headlines or all the articles, and all the stories in the paper.
I think the biggest thing I want folks to take away is this is an issue that we are not going to shy away from. This is an issue that all of us can come together and work on. And just as Minnesotans throughout these past 2 months have been working together to protect their neighbors, keep their neighbors housed, we will continue to find a way to do our part to make sure we're building strong societies with a strong foundation on housing.
Well, thank you for joining me on Sunday Take. When we come back, this week's take. Welcome back to Sunday Take. This week's take is about housing. And I want to tell you about the stories that I hear on this issue, because I think they're reflective of some of the challenges we have on ideology and economic policy in our country. A few years back, I was working with Multi-Housing Minnesota, Minnesota Multi-Housing. We were working on some ordinance stuff. It was a heated debate dynamic in Minneapolis City Council. And I was observing a news conference by activists about some of these new housing rules. And one of the activists just kind of came over and we struck up a conversation. And I said something to the effect of, well, if these ordinances pass, the insurance rates go up, and then the insurance rates are going to be passed along to the renters. So one of the challenges is that this is a domino effect that's not going to create more affordable housing. It's actually going to make some housing that is affordable less affordable. And then he looked at me and said, "Well, why do you need insurance?" And I kind of looked at him and I said, "Well, first of all, there's usually a loan, and the bank would require insurance, and then you want to hold your, you want to protect your asset in case something happened to it, like a fire or a storm or something like that." And looks at me and goes, "Well, so the banks are requiring the insurance, so this is why this, you know, the banks and the insurance companies are, you know, keeping the market in a bad spot." And I looked at him and I was like, "Well, how else would you know, finance some housing?" He said, "Well, we shouldn't even have private property ownership in this country." And I looked at him, and it's a very civil conversation. And I said, "I don't know how to have a conversation with you about housing if you don't believe private property should be owned." Now, that is not the dominant view of activists. That's not the dominant view of legislators. But it was one view that showed me that somebody who worked in the industry fundamentally didn't know or believe in the American economic system on housing. There's a lot of things we can fix, but we can't deconstruct the entire economic system. And that's essentially where this gentleman wanted to go on housing. Housing for me is personal. I grew up in an apartment my mom rented. It was in a safe neighborhood, came with good schools. Anybody who's listened to the show knows that I'm proud of growing up in Shoreview. Even some people in Shoreview are proud of me growing up there. But I never took that housing for granted, but I saw my mom write that check every month and I knew that it was expensive. But my mom had a solid job. She worked hard and the bills got paid. And that's where we have to get back to for housing, because as I've worked through life, bought my first homes, it did strike me that, especially now more than ever, that if I just pay my mortgage, you know, one of my largest assets just continues to grow in value. And wherever you've seen housing booms and housing crashes, you know that there's a certain wave of, you know, financing there that might not be as solid. Or you have a recession and a downturn, and that creates some volatility in the housing market. But at the end of the day, there is something to be said for being able to find someplace to live that's clean and safe. And if you work 40 hours, you can afford it. Your other life choices may afford you other expenses. But Minnesota needs housing. And as you heard from our guest, this is a statewide issue. This is not just a city's issue. I think St. Paul taught us all a lesson when they passed rent control. Full disclosure, I worked against it with the clients. Develop it and stopped. But I'll also tell you that capital hasn't been willing to come back to Minneapolis as well as it would have if not for George Floyd and some of the economic headwinds that the city has had. This past week, Adam Dunick and the downtown council had their annual meeting. They celebrated downtown. There's more construction permits. There's progress. I wrote in the newsletter, we have to have Minneapolis succeed because if Minneapolis doesn't succeed, the state doesn't succeed. And a lot of that's housing. You can't succeed if you can't employ people to workplaces. You can't succeed if you're living out of your car. And transit is important, but let's face it, we have not done all that well on our transit system. It isn't that safe. It isn't that livable over time. It's gotten better. But it all comes back to where do you want to live? And if we want people to live in Minnesota, we've got to figure out a way to build houses that are less expensive, including than our neighbors in Wisconsin or the Dakotas. We've got to find a way to lower the cost of housing and increase the production. It's the only way we can house the people we need for the economic growth for the future. So, as you're thinking about the economy, you're thinking about policy and some of the things we talk about here on Sunday Take, I call out housing. Legislative leaders talked about it a lot this week compared to previous years. And I think that's a good thing. And hopefully they'll continue the discussion, get some progress, pass some bills, and start what I'm saying is a 10-year need for more housing in Minnesota. 30,000 a year? That would be big. And we need to do more big things in Minnesota. And housing seems like a place where Democrats and Republicans agree. So with that, it's the Sunday Take. That's this week's take. I'll be with Vanita. She's in Fort Myers for spring break. I'll be with her Monday through Thursday, 6:20 is the usual time. You can always sign up for our newsletters, our other products, podcasts at thedailyagenda.com. Until next week, that's the Sunday Take.